Hi, welcome to Let's Locums. This is Mark Royer. I'm an ear, nose, and throat surgeon and locum tenens physician. I'm here today with Dr. Janine Morris. She is a board-certified diagnostic radiologist with subspecialty training in musculoskeletal imaging from the University of Utah. An honors graduate of both the undergraduate and medical programs at Creighton University, she has spent over a decade providing high-quality radiologic care across multiple states, including Indiana, Kentucky, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. Her experience spans general, breast, and musculoskeletal radiology, with notable tenures at Deaconess Health Systems, the VA, and various community health centers. Dr. Morris is recognized for academic excellence, leadership in medical honor societies, and her ongoing commitment to underserved and rural populations through locum tenens work. Dr. Morris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
So I'd like to start at the beginning. Can you tell us what first drew you into radiology and how you discovered the world of locum tenens?
So radiology, I knew about it because actually my dad's a radiologist. My mom's an x-ray tech. So basically I grew up being radiated. What I love about it is it's really like putting puzzle pieces together because it's visual and you're looking at, let's say, multiple images and figuring out what is the problem. Now we have the images and say, how does it all fit together? You can't just say, these are the symptoms, we're going to treat that. You have to put them together. So I like that puzzle aspect of it.
And so when you first got out of residency, then you did a fellowship at University of Utah. Did you go right into locum tenens from fellowship?
No, I came to Evansville, Indiana for a job here, classic private practice job, and worked there for 10 years. Was really involved in setting up, good relationships with the orthopedic surgeons here and with running the breast centers locally, and really enjoyed doing that. It's a lot of work. You know how it is. You work to make the money. You don't just, it doesn't just fall in your hands. You know, there's not a lot of passive income in medicine.
No, there's not. And especially, it sounds like you were in some other kind of administrative tasks too. I know radiology is very RVU heavy and certainly not passive income work.
I know it's a lot of working for free, but you have to do it to support your group and to make sure you're working in the environment you want to. So I was involved on multiple fronts about that same time, you know, I worked hard. I was top producer. I did not stop. We were still taking our own night call at that time. Oh. I had my two girls when I was in the beginning of my practice. Actually, my oldest, who's 12 now, she was born on the day I actually became full partner. So I did that for 10 years. And then I just said, it's a classic example. There's only so much they can push you at. And I said, you know, what am I doing here? What are my hobbies? What do I do outside of radiology? So I said, I'm going to take a step back. And thankfully, what I'd done is I'd put money aside, invested wisely, and such that I had the means to take off for a while and decide what I wanted to do. So then that's when I got into locums. I said, okay, what am I going to do? I don't really want to go back working in the same practice I was, because my natural instinct is to do more. So I'm going to end up in a burnt out state once again. Let's try something else. Well, what I found about locums, it's a really nice way for you to try out different platforms to determine what's best. So before I got into it, I thought it was just, oh, locums is locums. But there's actually a lot of different variety in how you can do it. So I got into it to say, okay, do I want to do here and there a couple of days at one place, another? Do I want to be on-site, and with radiology, you can do teleradiology, so you can be off-site. Do I want to do a hybrid model? Do I want a permanent locums job? So yes, I'm still considered locums, so I'm not a part of their group, let's say, but you become almost a part of the group because you're the person that they're always using.
Well, that's great. I think it becomes very difficult when you're a partner in a group to find that balance, to be able to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to work a week on, a week off, or something like that. Did you try that approach at all and hit a brick wall, or was it just, you knew you just needed a change?
That was just not going to be an option. That was not an option. I did position myself to be pretty valuable to the group, so they wouldn't want me to be cutting back. I really, really love the group, love what I did there. It wasn't set up to accommodate that. It doesn't matter what you bring to the table if everyone else in the group is doing it one way, it sort of falls that way.
Yeah, that's a barrier that I see a lot. In your case, you saved and invested wisely, and you're kind of looking back. You've got the kids that are, you know, we have kids that are similar of ages, and you're like, well, why do I have to work 80 hours a week here? Why do I have to take this call? I want to continue to practice medicine. Isn't there a path forward where we can come up with a job share or a part-time situation? And frequently the answer is no. Like either you get in line with everybody else or, you know, find someplace else. And I think that's changing a little bit because there are so many people that are in our position and looking to have some semblance of a life outside of work. But I think locum tenens is often found to be the best path forward in a lot of situations. We have some doctors who will be able to find like a group that they direct contract with or a hospital they'll direct contract with where they won't use an agency or a locums company. And then some that'll work just with the locums company from the get-go. Where did you start with locums? Did you just start searching online and work through an agency? Did you start direct contracting with some hospitals that needed part-time assistance? How did you approach your first locums gig?
Well, what happened is I had no idea how to go about it at all. And what's interesting is I started this journey probably about 5 years ago. And as you would know, it is a whole different world. So I tried to call around locally to see if anybody needed somebody. You know, it'd be a short drive. I didn't really want to do it. With radiology, you can really work from home. So that's what I was first trying for. And everything's filled, you know. So then I found, I think the first one was, it was with a company. And they placed me in Utah. And I just went there for a week. And I liked it. And then I went with another one. I said, whenever you need me, just let me know. Put me on the list to come back first because they could request different people. Then I did a group in Bowling Green, again, through another company. And liked that a lot because I'm close enough to Bowling Green. I actually chose some time to work at home, but I could also go down there because I still like the interaction. So I call that my hybrid. So the first one was I just went down there, stayed for a week, came home. The next one, then I did sort of the hybrid by choice because I wanted to see, hey, maybe I'd like that. Then I started realizing, what would it look like if I would just do entirely teleradiology? And so to start that, then again, I looked at the locums because what happens if I didn't like this, you know? And any private practice group, it's hard for them to set up the whole infrastructure to have the IT, all of that for a radiologist, for them to take on their own, so to speak. It used to be called Nighthawk, but now it's not just nighttime. It's for all during the day for us. So that's why I sort of went with a company to say, okay, then they could put me out in there and say, this is a group that wants XYZ. Do you want to do it? So when I started, it was, here are the jobs we have. Do any of these fit for you? Now it's become, this is what Janine wants to do. You find me the group. And if it's not what I want, I'm not going to take it.
That's a great position to be in. And so I have to say, like, many a nights I have thought to myself, Royer, you should have done radiology. Because to me, I don't know, this idea of being a teleradiologist, can you talk me out of why that isn't the perfect type of practice setup?
Well, it's how you use it, because we really have become a commodity. And I think that's happened just across medicine. But especially when you're just faceless, you're very replaceable. But in terms of the working, it's beautiful because you can sort of pace yourself. You can do what you want. And that's where the different models come in. If you're doing per hour money, you're getting paid per hour. Mm-hmm. You're doing paid per what you read, per study. There's lots of different options. So what's nice about it is nowadays they've open their minds up to all different avenues of how we have the work done to get done. And it used to be there was one way to get it done. You come into the hospital, you work all day, go home, same thing again and again. But now that more and more people are saying, hey, we have to work hard when we are working, so let's use this to our advantage.
You know, I think the only negative that I could think of in my head when I try to talk myself back into ENT is this idea that I would imagine that there's some degree of isolation. One thing that I think a lot of physicians enjoy about their jobs is the interaction with other physicians, really, to be able to have interesting discussions with interesting people. Now, you and I are in a unique situation in that our significant others are in medicine and are actually in our same specialties, right? So that helps a lot, I think, fill a lot of that void. But what do you do to stay connected professionally in your specialty, working mostly from home doing teleradiology, do you go to CME conferences? Do you go to your annual professional association conferences? What ways have you found to stay connected professionally?
I'm actually a communication major, so I like to talk to people. So I never felt isolated at work because, like you said, you talk to the techs all the time. And with radiology, I really kept up, I made an effort to always talk to the referring clinicians. When you figure out a patient's problem together, it's sort of, you get a little high, like, oh, we couldn't figure it out on our own. Now we put our heads together and, you know. So what I do in the jobs that I have now, I have reached out to the people that are also in that group, because it's usually like they're still the people that are on site. And so if I can connect with them, so I can still feel like I'm part of a group. But that's always been when I interview with people, as I move more from just trying out different places to where I want to be more like a home base for a teleradiology situation. I wanted to talk to some of the people that are in the group to see, so I'm not isolated. Because one of the scary things is you're in charge of reading. What happens if you come up with a case that you need help with? So right. You need to make sure that there's a way. Yeah, you could just throw it back on the queue and not read it. I mean, that's what they say. You don't have to read it if you're uncomfortable. Okay, but you're going to get pretty bored. I mean, right. I like to learn. And I'm like, then the next time it comes up, I'm throwing it back on the queue. And, you know, and you also make money. So then there's you're throwing out a $100 bill. You know? Right. So I really do try to interact with them. The current job I have now, we use Teams and we're calling each other all the time. And you still have that camaraderie. So I've always asked, how collegial are they? Do people want to learn from each other, ask questions of each other? And that's a really good, a good way to start out to find if you would fit with the group too, because you see how that receptive that they are. On the flip side, if you're somebody that doesn't want to talk to anybody, you don't have to talk to anybody.
I had an assignment once where Teams was heavily utilized. I thought that was a great way to stay connected with the other docs in the group at all these various sites, if you had a question about a patient or a protocol or something like that. So
yeah.
So this kind of goes into my next question, which is, you know, how do you decide which assignments are a good fit for you? Do you have like certain must-haves before accepting a locums role? It sounds like making sure you have a collegial network of other radiologists that you can interact with. Are there any other must-haves that you look for before you accept a gig?
Well, for me, with radiology in particular, but I think it would nowadays with all, I mean, everything is computer-based. You have to have access to IT. They have to be very upfront with the point person. You need the direct name number of whether it's a practice manager, whoever it is, you need with the group and with the hospital. Because you'll have some groups that go through locums companies that you can't even get a hold of anybody with the locums company to ask a question of. And you show up at a site and your room isn't available. You don't know where you're supposed to be. You don't know what you're supposed to do. And you're like, just let me do my work.
Right,
but it's all the logistics that will drive you crazy. So number one is make sure they have to be very straightforward with saying, this is the person you contact at any time. Here's their cell phone number. Here's another person you can call. Here's somebody at the hospital. If they are hesitant to give it to you and say, just always go through the locums, then that's a red flag.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
A really good point.
The other person they can reach out to.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is they have to have, you need the numbers of the IT people. You know, so many, the reason
not,
is.
Not the help desk, not the general help desk number.
Oh, gosh. No.
Not like the thing on hold. Know,
because I'll tell you, especially with radiology, but I don't want to. I can't do a hot ticket or whatever you call it at whatever place.
Yeah. Oh, is the ticket in? What's the ticket number?
Yes. Because, you know, you are going to be logging into multiple systems. You're not going to understand it. You need all your logins to be working perfectly. And so I wish I knew that at the beginning. Say, no, it's not going to be acceptable for me to just put in a heat ticket. Yes, if I need to, good. But you know what? I don't even know how to do that right now. Mm-hmm. So I need you to check to make sure all my logins are there. If I need to be there ahead of time, then it needs to be scheduled. I'm not working while I'm getting all my logins set up.
Right.
Or you need to to, I need to be on site early, and I'm going to need to be paid for being on site early.
So that's a really good point, and one I wanted to ask specifically about radiology. One thing we do with our, with specialty locums is we really try to value the doctor's time. So you made the point of, well, if I, you know, I'm not going to be setting up my mogins while I'm not on shift or expected to do this stuff uncompensated. So that's online orientation or any required modules, or hell, even getting like your BLS. I don't know if you have to even keep that up from teleradiology, but like all of those things, like you should be compensated as a physician. And I think one of the areas that a lot of burnout has come from is this fact, especially with like take the Epic inbox, the notorious Epic inbox, that you'll see patients, you're done generating RVUs, and now you're spending an hour or two every night responding to reviewing tests, responding to patients. Often docs who aren't working locums aren't compensated for that. In radiology specifically, my friends that are in the field that are in more traditional practices, they are purely like RVU based, whether they're partnership or employed, it's all RVU. For something like, you know, for something like what you're doing, do you have jobs that are still offers? Like, hey, I know you're going to be working for us, you know, for these 8 hours, but you're just going to be RVU based. So whatever comes in, you know, you may make more or less, or are you pretty much set? Like, hey, I'm getting paid per hour. I'm available. This is my time, my opportunity cost. I'm not doing other things I'd like to be doing. So it's an hourly rate, regardless of what kind of what's coming in that queue. How does it work in radiology specifically?
So there's different ways you can be paid. So obviously there's RVUs. That means that you're based on what kind of study you're reading. You know, they pay you per RVU. They don't. Some places still pay you per click. So they say you read a head CT, you're getting this much. You're reading a. So it sort of is the same thing. The more difficult a case is, the longer it takes, we're going to pay you more, because sometimes there's going to be, quote, an easy case, but it's going to take you longer. So it'll, you know, even out. Then there's the per hour. And where you need to be careful with that is in radiology, you know, I'm a efficient reader. So I can read a lot more in an hour than, let's say, someone else. Well, what is my incentive to kill myself in an hour?
Well, that's a great question.
And are they limiting you how many hours you can work? Mm-hmm. And a big thing is, what is the expectation? Are you clearing the list? We always refer to the list. All the x-rays have to be read. Are you the only one on and you have to clear it all? Or do they always leave some for the next shift? That could be a podcast in its own. but the big thing is to, so I am not a huge proponent of the hourly in terms of when you're supposed to be working, meaning their doc's gone, you're covering for them, you're working their hours. If it's just, you're going to be sitting here, this is what you're going to do per hour. There's always going to be more, or you're going to be slow because it's not your system. So it sort of goes both ways. And I struggle with that one. For me, I would say hourly isn't good because I can do so
really?
Much more.
That's
can
interesting.
I can make so much more money in what I can read per RVU in an hour.
So let me go down a little bit of a rabbit hole with this, because I find I'm unique. I think that I find the RVU fascinating, especially as it relates to docs' productivity, their payment, et cetera. So as a radiologist who is more productive, can read through more scans more efficiently than the average radiologist, your incentive would then be to have essentially a ongoing payment that's productivity based. In radiology, do you ever have a situation where your box will be empty and you're just sitting there available and nothing's in the inbox? Does that ever happen? So that'd be one question that I think would be a potential pitfall. And the other one would be, if you're working hourly and you turn in a timesheet, that makes comp pretty easily. Okay, I worked 8 hours. You submit that to the locums company and they can get you paid pretty quickly. With RVUs, at least in surgery, it seems like they have to go through the whole process of they read your op note, then they bill, and then it seems like it takes sometimes months to figure out what they owe you if you have any RVU bonus. So is it different in radiology? Do they know pretty quickly, okay, you read this many scans, it's this many RVUs, so here's your payment. Does it delay your pay at all?
So the first one you said about if there's times you're sitting there and you're doing nothing, that comes to one of the other questions that's hard to find out the answer to. If you're going to do the RVU route, I have done it where I've sat there and they had the best, or per click, whatever, the best reimbursement, but you're sitting there doing nothing. So, or
not getting paid, right? Like what?
Yeah. Or in radiology, I was with one group. I'd never heard of it. Some of the radiologists would lock up studies. They just sit on them. And I'm like, I'm sitting here waiting to read them.
They'd like claim them, let their box accumulate, and then.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So, yes, there, you have to make sure that you're going into an environment that is busy enough. So actually, to get back to what I was saying, how you pick out what is the best, maybe it's if it's a slower practice and you're going to be sitting there doing nothing, that's where you want the hourly rate. If it's going to be, if it has the volume, that's where you want the RVUs based.
Gotcha. Okay,
so to answer your question, they actually even have it at some locations. You have a running, like Rad Partners is one. They have their own work system. They have a running number of your RVUs while you're reading even.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So you can always.
Much more efficient at calculating it than we are in surgery.
And because the other thing, even if they don't have that, it is, you know, they print it out by CPT code and then they just say they have a multiplier. So then they can say, if you read an MRI, it's times this, and we said 38 per RVU, then that's what you get. The thing with productivity too, you have to say what you want to read, because to make, let's say, I'm guessing at a number, let's say $1,000 for whatever. Maybe you read 9 MRs, you're going to be reading hundreds of plain films. So even that, yeah, you can say, well, maybe plain films, yeah, maybe they're a little easier. Well, if you're reading that many, you're missing stuff. There's no way you can, so you can read the bread and butter cases all day long. And so you have to also know, that's another good question, know what the mix is.
I've been really surprised to see how it varies from group to group in radiology, and how radiology is its unique breed with regards to how quickly they're able to calculate those RVUs. That's really fascinating. One thing I noticed when we were talking and from your bio is you do have maintained licenses in multiple states. Do you have any tips or tricks for managing kind of the administrative side of being a multi-state radiologist?
In terms of managing all of your licenses, so I started just going license happy at some point when I wasn't working a job. And I got the PACT, the Interstate PACT.
Oh, yeah, the IMLC. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I got that, and then it's pretty easy to get additional licenses. I mean, I have a record for the Nevada and Colorado. I literally clicked on a button in a Saturday morning. 2 hours later, I had a license number.
Wow.
No one's ever heard of that. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. So the IMLC is great. It's a great thing to have, the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact, and it's growing. I think Indiana is even a part of it now.
Yeah.
That's one thing I encourage docs, that if they are doing locums or considering it, it does give you the opportunity to really quickly get jobs, because sometimes it's kind of a limited time frame. If there's something you like and you're not licensed in the state, you may be passed over for another candidate who does. The IMLC puts you in that same group as if you even had your license in that state already. I've never heard 2 hours. That's very impressive. I think there might be a Guinness World Record there.
Yeah. Do read before you sign up for and pay. I think it's $700 or something. Before you pay for it that first time, make sure that you meet all the requirements. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, you don't get any money back. So just be careful about that.
And the other thing I would say too is we usually will try to cover that for our docs. So if they're working for us or interested in it, that's usually something that we can get covered as well. I think it's really important because it is so valuable. And like you said, it's really important to read the fine print, because it doesn't apply to everybody, mm-hmm. but it's a great, great option when it does.
I did use a group that said they could manage your licenses for you. Ah. And when I was first getting everything together, I was like, okay, this is a great idea. I used it for maybe 2 years. Then I'm like, you pay so much money. You just need to be organized. And if you can see on my CV, that's not your typical CV. That is like my binder of every date, every number, everything I need. So what I would say is, for administrative wise, if you're going to be doing lots of locums, with that comes all the credentialing. And I know groups do help out with that, but when you go with a different group every time, they need all the same stuff. So I have been very efficient to, you need to get everything. You have to have your driver's license, your passport, your social security. You have to have all of your, I mean, they'll ask you the address and the phone number of your high school. Some places. But what I'm saying is take the time whenever to slowly put this all together if you're considering doing locums work to have all of that stuff, your USMLE scores, your everything in one place and have it all in PDF format that, like right now, I could apply for a job. It used to take me a while to get everything together. I can have a whole application, everything that they could ask for all together.
It's make sure amazing. You get
your med mal, make sure you know all the places that you've had your med mal insurance and everything like that. Just, and now it's like, I'm not even scared when they say, oh, you have to fill out more paperwork. The other thing is I usually look at them and say, here's all my paperwork. You can fill out those applications.
Really good points there, Dr. Morris. Did notice on your CV, it would be so easy to get you credentialed or licensed anywhere very quickly for the reasons that you said. Not only do you have your USMLE scores, but you notice you have like the dates that they're taken. I mean, very granular detail. I had a professor who used to call like her CV with everything called a kitchen sink CV, right? It's like everything. Yep. This idea of, oh, my resume is just like one page with a, you know, no, like get that out of your mind. That's like completely useless. Really what you want is exactly what you've developed and you have on this PDF document. You have absolutely everything that would be needed for a credentialing application. And it sounds like you've learned it's really important to work with a company that will fill out those applications for you. It should be as easy on you as possible. Now, it doesn't seem easy when you don't have a CV like yours, right? Because you then do have to go back and hunt emails. And, oh, when was I covered by that malpractice? And when did I take that exam? And when did I have that license? Did that expire? Is that open? So it looks like you've figured out this system. And I love it because I'm sure that's something you're kind of updating as you go along. But it truly does have everything you need. And then you can just submit that. And that is frustrating, I think, for a lot of docs because they don't realize the granular detail that's necessary. And frequently they're like, well, I gave this for this license or for this hospital, and they all want it again, and sometimes within the same place. So if you have a CV like that, you are pretty much golden, I would think. I mean, you can just give that and say, hey, look at that. Let me just forward you the email that I sent before.
And what's don't even waste your time trying to say, well, I just filled this out here, and I would just, because I'm like, I gave you that information. They're like, well, we need it. But you can see on my CV, I even have dates that I had my COVID vaccines because they need those, and they actually need a copy. They want like a actual copy of that card from the CDC. They're going to want anything that you're not working for more than 6 months. So I have another thing that I add to my CV. I just have my any gaps in your employment history. Mm. And I used to, it's silly. I mean, now doesn't everybody take a gap year?
Yeah, right.
Or three. But, you know, you take any time off. They don't really care. They swear it's just they want you to not be in prison. I'm like, well, you're doing mm-hmm. a background check anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, a lot of redundancy,
You know, it's just you say, for whatever reason, you know, you wanted to take time off. They're not judging why you took time off. They just want to just be truthful what you were doing.
I think what helps, and I think you've figured this out, is if you realize the people on the other end, they're just checking a box, right? They don't really care whether you were in Europe for 6 months or just, you know, working on some side project. You just have to, they just have to like check it that, okay, well, oh, there was 2 weeks where this doctor wasn't working. Did they give us an explanation? Yes. Right. Yes. So, yeah, I think that if you kind of frame it like that, hey, it's just someone checking a box and here's my CV that has all those box checks, then that will save you a lot of frustration for sure.
Yes, yes.
So,
and if you just go ahead and get all that stuff together and you won't even bat an eye about it. It's like, sure.
Yeah.
And you always have it because you'll be traveling somewhere and they'll need something. And then I'm like, oh, no big deal. I've just got it on my computer. And
yeah. So, with all that being said, what advice would you give a radiologist or probably any physician that's considering their first locum tenens assignment, but they may be hesitant to step away from what they feel is their kind of safety of that traditional group practice?
So I would say definitely try it out and use it as a, to be curious about what else is out there. And one of the biggest misconceptions concerns that people have is, what happens if I quit my job? Well, first off, you don't necessarily, you can find out, do you have to quit it? So that's the first thing. Or can you be doing both at the same time? So let's say we get past that. Then you say, well, how's this going to look for my resume? We're so old school in terms of we think you get a job, you stay at the job, and if you're jumping around, oh, that's a red flag. Well, not necessarily. Instead, look at it as, and even sell yourself as, well, exactly what I did. I wanted to say, maybe try out different things. I didn't start out that way. I started out nervous going, I'm going to look like a flake. I'm going to look like I had problems. And they're going to see this great resume and go, wait a second, why can't she keep a job? And instead, it's I'm choosing to. And so I realized, if I don't know what I'm going to do, let's just hit it head on and say, I'm doing this because I want to get something out of it. So in terms of that, if that's what you're doing, actually try different jobs. Don't keep doing the same one. So maybe you cold call somebody and they want you to cover. So you're working for a private practice. Then you try it with one locums company. You don't like it with that locums company. Try a different one. And every time you get smarter about what questions to ask. And it's really, I have made friends at the locums groups too. You know, I still talk to one of the guys that I worked with at Bowling Green, and that was like 3 years ago. So you can still make those connections, and sometimes they can help you get the next job too. So, because that's the other thing, really try to make some connection, because the other big thing is you're going to have references from the last 2 years. And if you do a locums, you might not that's off-site totally where radiology is sort of different, at least try to make some connections that people will know that you're good at what you do, you're personable. Because most people, they're not going to give an in-depth review. They just say, yeah, they're a solid person. There's one more thing in our inbox. We say, okay, they're fine. You know,
Really good
but
point.
That would be my other thing to, oh, and one other thing, when you go to the different hospitals, get a contact name and email address from the HR department. Because when you go, every time you go to a new group, sometimes they will have to do the check that you had privileges at different hospitals. And sometimes, especially if it's a small one, you might have a hard time getting that contact. Like nobody in a small HR department will get back to the person trying to get that verification. So there have been times I've said, well, here's the name and number. You see, it's on my CV, name, number, email address of who you need to contact, and they will be able to show that I worked at that hospital.
Well, that's great advice, because that is something that will jam up a credentialing process. What you're talking about there is wherever you've gotten credentials at, they have to go through and verify that you had credentials there and that you left in good standing. I've not heard someone mention that as a bit of advice before, but that is a great idea to have, because it will just go to a general inbox, but getting those verification of credentialing is very important. Do you have that on your CV? Do you keep those names on there? Do you keep that separate?
The ones that I know are easy, but the small ones, you can see that it's on there. Like if I worked at Mille Lacs, a tiny hospital in northern Minnesota, I have the name of it's on an Indian reservation. I have the name of the contact person there that I can just call them up and say, hey, look for that when it's coming through. So
you've already addressed one myth that I think needs to be busted, and it's the idea that a locums docs are working locum tenens because they're flakes, right? Any other myths about locum tenens that you think need to be busted?
So usually they think that there's something wrong with their personality or there's something wrong with their abilities. And so that's just not true. And I mean, I have run into people that are great, and it's just for radiology, and I think actually all of medicine, it's what we started with. It's a little slow to take on this work-life balance. Now they talk about it all the time, but have they actually done the measures to allow us to actually have the work-life balance, or do they just talk about it? So I think more and more people are looking at other options, like part-time at home, part-time in the office, doing locums, different ways that we can actually put into effect this work-life balance. Versus the typical private practice that you're never really away from your patients and the clinic, you know, it can only do so much to make it different. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So this is a way I see that a lot of new young people are going to, because if they've started, if you've started a family, you're going to up and move the family. Everyone's going to get established, and it might take a couple of years for you to determine that you like the practice or not. And now you're going to commit to your next place that you want to go. And I had a brilliant, brilliant guy that did fellowship with me, loved him. He went to, I think, 4 jobs in the first, like, I don't know, in 10 years, he had done about 4 jobs. And he kept on calling me. He's like, Janine, I need your reference again. I'm like, I mean, he is a superstar, easy to get along with. But it wasn't the right fit for his family, too.
Yeah,
it's not
very,
just
very
you.
Common.
It's your family.
Yeah,
so
totally. Looking forward, are you going to stay in locums in the long term, return to a permanent role, pursue something else entirely? What's in?
Well, I am sort of doing my plan right now. I am working for the VA. And so I work from home, but it's for a group in Pennsylvania. And it's actually a really good setup. They pay excellent. But more importantly, it's 4-hour shifts. And I can sign up for whatever shifts I want. Then I can also sort of jump around, and they cover multiple VAs. So I can sort of say, hey, you need me here, you need me here. And that's sort of, it's perfect for me. I feel wanted and I'm appreciated, and I can help out. It's not always just the same every day. And you never tell them if you're on vacation or not. It's just you don't sign up for a shift. So it's...
How far ahead do you have to sign up for shifts?
I signed up to work this evening, like a couple hours ago.
Wow.
Because
that
does
sound like a perfect job.
There's such a shortage.
Do you ever get like shift incentives? Like if like nobody's filled up and they're like, hey, we really need someone this 4-hour period in 3 days. Does that ever pop up as a thing, or do they usually get them covered?
This is a little different because they can always send it out to a national network. So
they don't
do that with the VA, but a lot of places will do that. And the thing that I like about that flexibility is it just makes, I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. When you are working, you're working hard. It all comes down to the autonomy. Mm. You can do a lot more if you have control over so much of it. You can put in those hard hours. So I always look for that there's a little bit of not just, I always tell them, I'm not a shift worker. Because I'd like to have some more ability to make up my own schedule. So
how many hours do you think you're working a week these days, now that you're about 4 or 5 years into your locums journey?
Well, this I'd say is the first one that I've done more regular, as opposed to them just saying, hey, come here. So I'm doing about... I went in saying I'd work 3 full days a week. What it's turned out is I end up working about, probably 4 half days. Then you take yesterday, I did 8 hours. It's all over the place. Mm. The other thing with radiology, I'll say one thing specific to radiology. Make sure you can work in more than one place. Because this works great for me, because I travel back and forth between Minnesota, where I'm part of the time, and here. I have a laptop with a docking station, and I have the monitors up there too. So if you're going somewhere, like you have 2 homes, make sure that they can just give you a laptop, and so I can be working whether I'm up there or down here. So, you know, there's a lot of flexibility there too. So especially for who it's really good for too, we're short radiologists. There are retired radiologists that don't want to go back to that standard private practice. We need the radiologists back in the workforce that are maybe newly retired. Let's say part of the year they're down in Florida or wherever. You could still do it, go back and forth.
It is one of there are a few specialties right now that are extremely sought after. Radiology is probably the top 2 or 3, along with hemonc right now. But it's any radiologist who's considering it, it's a very good time, I think, to if you don't want to feel comfortable making the full transition, to at least, kind of like you're saying, well, try something out, you know, give it a chance, and you can do it without like a long-term commitment, which is great about locums, is you could just try it for, like you said, your first shift was a week, right? In various settings, whether that's hybrid or in person, or, you know, more commonly even teleradiology, I think there's a huge demand for, so. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for your time. I do something with our guests called the Fast Five. Usually it's about something that's kind of interesting that I see in the background or that I kind of want to learn a little bit more about. So this is the Fast Five Nebraska and Omaha edition. So is that where you grew up? Okay. I know you did your medical school and residency there.
No, I did not grow up there. So
where did you grow up?
In Danville, Illinois. It's near Champaign-Urbana. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think, I'm going to go with Omaha because you spent at least, 8 years there? Yeah, 13 years. Okay. I think this is, I think you can answer the Fast Five Nebraska and Omaha edition. So, studying and trained at Creighton. What's one thing people don't know about Omaha that they should?
There are no cows in the street. No, I'll tell you a real one. Husker football is so crazy that when a Husker game is on, there's only that on the radio. You go into any public place, there's no music playing, anything. It's only that. And now I will tell you a medical side of it. When there is a game on, and I did rotations at the VA when I was a med student, the urgent care that you come in, it's either going to be good or bad based on the outcome of the game. if it's a good game, no one's coming in. It's dead. If it's a bad game, I kid you not, I'm not making this up, there is a lot of chest pain patients coming in. You have a whole lot of rule out MIs if the Huskers lose.
I'm envious of their passion about the sporting events. That's awesome. Okay, so the Oracle of Omaha, Warren Buffett, if he invited you to lunch, recently retired from Berkshire, what would you ask him?
I would ask him if he ever felt, maybe not 100%, but 99% confident in what he was doing with his life, meaning what decisions he made. Was it always him taking a risk, or was it ever so obvious that he's like, this is it, no second thoughts?
That is a great question. Yeah. He seems very confident in his decisions. I saw a documentary of him once, and he was like driving around in his old car, stopping at McDonald's. And I know he's very anti-private jet travel, you know, so I don't know. Be curious to know how confident he was in those decisions as well.
I was going to say, I know where we'd be eating his favorite steakhouse. What is it?
What's it called?
G-O-R-A-T. Goretz.
Goretz.
Goretz. Yeah.
Have you been there?
No.
No?
I've heard it's not that great. I don't want to go there. They have really good restaurants in Omaha.
So Connor Oberst of Bright Eyes I love his music, and I know he kind of made the Omaha kind of an indie music scene. What would be your favorite Bright Eyes song?
What is the name of it? I have it. I have one. It's
First Day of My Life.
Yes, is that it, one. Okay. Right, good. I thought you were going to ask me a 311 song or a 311 question.
No.
They're from Omaha. They're Omaha.
No, are they really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Did you go to much music there?
I went to some good ones. I saw Beck in a little tiny stage.
That's awesome.
Small.
That's what I'm talking about.
And that was really great. I also got to see, they brought Third Eyed Blind to Creighton for like a spring fling.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
George Clinton came to Creighton too for spring fling. And then... I skipped my organic chemistry review to stand in line to get tickets to Prince.
Jeez. I mean, I think it has a pretty good music scene. Like, I think that's really, one thing that surprised me when I interviewed there for residency. So you've been across the country as a locums radiologist. What's one thing about Nebraska that no other place can beat?
Can we go to Utah? Because I trained at Utah.
Let's do Utah.
Okay, no, I will say.
What is one thing? Yeah.
I can say Nebraska. I would say really it is just the enthusiasm that they have for just like team sports, comes from the Huskers, and everyone's nice usually to each other on game day because everybody's for the Huskers.
My final question will be a Utah question. So what do you miss most about Salt Lake City? Utah in general, Salt Lake specifically.
Salt Lake City just had this wonderful feeling of, like, it wasn't like a big sprawling city. It had all these little, you know, corners, 9th and 9th or 11th and 11th, and interesting vibes at each area. They had a good, you know, the U is there, so you've got the college scene, you've got the arts areas, great food. And where I lived in the foothills, so on the eastern side of the city, mm-hmm. I could be at, what was it? I think it was maybe 9 or 10 different ski places in 20 minutes. And I went out there not a skier. I learned to ski, love it. But it's just, it's such an active community. You're constantly, people are biking, riding, outside, walking around the parks. And it just is a really, like, open feeling.
Yeah. Sounds a lot like happy. Evansville, quite frankly. I mean, are you describing Salt Lake City or Evansville? I can't. We were talking about Salt Lake City, right?
Yes. The Warwick Trail. It's the Warwick Trail.
Yeah. Yeah. The muddy Ohio with the barges, yeah. You know, just yeah. a short distance away. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, well, Dr. Janine Morris, thank you so much for joining us today and chatting with us about your locums experience as a radiologist. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Best of luck to everyone.